We've been talking for the last several weeks, in fact, more than a month, about this concept of if only. So many times we look back on our life and we make these if only statements. If only I would have followed through. If only I hadn't chosen to do this. If only I had decided to do that. And these questions sometimes are so unfair to ourselves because we always ask the questions with the assumption that we know the answer. For instance, if only I would have finished my degree, I would have a fulfilling, wonderful job today. Well, that may be true and it may not. If only I would have asked her out, she would now be my wife. Well, maybe, maybe not. If only I hadn't racked up all these bills and gotten so into debt, then today I'd have a nice car to drive and I'd have a house and I'd have all that kind of stuff. Well, maybe, maybe not. You see, these if only statements that we make many times are incredibly unfair to ourselves because there's no way we can truly see what that preferred future might have been. And so what happens is we begin to tear ourselves down. We begin to get discouraged because of decisions that we made or choices that didn't go exactly the way we thought they would. And we instead begin to think of everything that might have been, could have been, should have been based on what that decision was and is. Now, don't let me give you the idea that just making all those decisions is fine and that it's okay. There's consequences that come from every single decision that we make in life. In fact, my son came to me this week. A lot of you know Caleb. He's the one up here playing the cajon, the box up here earlier today. I love Caleb because he's at that age now where everything is like new and different and fun. And so he came to me this week. He said, "Dad, you know it's impossible to do nothing, right?" I've seen him do nothing a lot, so I was waiting to hear the answer on this one. And he said, "Dad, it's impossible to do nothing because, like, if you're just sitting there doing nothing, you're sitting. If you're laying in bed doing nothing, you're laying down." He's right. You can't argue with that. I mean, he's totally, absolutely correct in every way, shape, and form. And so sometimes we think, well, you know what? I didn't do anything. I didn't make a bad decision. I didn't make a bad choice. I just chose not to do anything. Well, see, doing nothing is doing something. There's never a time when we're just so static in life that our actions or lack thereof don't make a difference on the world around us. But sometimes the reason that we dwell so strongly on those things of the past is because we have this idea of what things might have been. And sometimes it's a very accurate view and sometimes it's a very inaccurate view. So we talked for the first couple of weeks about what are those things that cause us the regrets. Remember that? I mean, everything from relationship choices to, just self-pride and some of that stuff, you know, those things that cause us those regrets. And we talked for the last couple of weeks about what are the things necessary to keep us from those if-only moments? What are those things necessary to keep us from struggling in that same kind of way? We talked a couple of weeks ago about this idea of self-discipline. Which is something I hate. I'll just be real honest with you, okay? I would love if self-discipline were not something that were necessary in life, because for me it's hard. Andy, the guy who's playing drums this morning, he and I went to pick up the donuts for our setup crew. We have bribery called Donut King Donuts. And so we pick them up every Sunday morning and we bring them in for our setup crew to be able to use and all. And we were sitting there and I was joking half-heartedly, half in true terror of my own life, said, you know, we saw that the Genotas came to help us get ready this morning. Michelle Genotas helped me with this trainer challenge thing. So she's checking to make sure I don't do bad stuff. And so there was part of me that's like, if I eat a fritter at Donut King, she won't know I did it. I didn't, don't worry. I don't have to run extra laps this Friday or anything like that. But there was that thought that ran through my head. Because see, part of what was necessary for me was not just self-discipline, not just making that choice myself, but knowing that I was accountable to someone else. That helped me. I told you all before, so I would come in, I'd have a donut on Sunday morning. Now I have a donut hole. And yes, I did have my singular donut hole this morning just because it makes me not want to punch somebody on an early Sunday morning while I'm getting ready. So I had that sugar intake and everything's wonderful and enjoyed that, you see. But that was a measure of self-discipline because it would have been a whole lot easier to have had one and then come back and have another and then come back and have another. I don't like self-discipline. I wish that I didn't have to have it. I just have as many donut holes as I wanted to have. But that's not the life we live in. And it's not just in areas like that, but it has to do with self-discipline in the way we handle our finances, self-discipline in the way we interact with those that we are in relationship with, self-discipline at work, self-discipline at school, self-discipline in the way we take care of our bodies. See, we're required, we're called to be self-disciplined. Last week we talked about this concept of contentment. See, one of the biggest problems that we get in life, and one of the reasons that we end up with these if-only statements, are because we're not content with where we are. I mean, it is really, really simple. You want to watch a person make the biggest relationship mistakes of their life, watch their choices for 2 weeks after they break up with somebody. Why? Why? Because see, they went from being in a relationship to not being in a relationship. They're now discontent because they liked having somebody to call on a regular basis. They liked having somebody to hang out with. They liked having somebody to go eat with. They liked having somebody to go to the movies with. So they jump into another relationship that may be totally and completely wrong, not because it's the right choice to make, but because they're not content being single. So they jump right back into that. I mean, you see it with families all the time. You know, well, we're not happy with each other. Okay, so what are you going to do about it? Let's get a dog. That'll fix everything. Because that doesn't require time, energy, or effort or anything like that, you know? Well, let's just go. Let's get a new car. If we get a new car, we feel good about ourselves. We enjoy driving around town. That'll make everything better. Let's find a different place to live. Let's do this. Let's do that. And because of discontent within our life, we make choices that end up being if-only statements later on down the road. I want to talk today, if we could, for just a few minutes, about one of the biggest hurdles to if-only statements that I'm aware of, personally. And there may be others, but to me, this is just one of the absolute biggies. And it really comes down to this concept of, not only am I self-disciplined, not only am I content with who I am or where I'm at for that moment, but have I dealt with who I was? Rachel and I were joking around the other day, and I didn't ask permission to share this, so if I get in trouble later and you see me with bruises, you'll know why, but okay. Rachel's in a show right now through one of our local theater groups, and as part of the show, there's a guy in the show that has to pick her up and twirl her around. And she looked at me in a very sincere, honest sense of panic and said, "Chad, he's not going to be able to do that." And I'm sitting here trying to figure out in my mind why. Number one, the guy's a professional bodybuilder. He could pick me up and twirl me around. So that's not a big issue, you know? And I mean, she was dead serious about it. She wasn't joking. She wasn't trying to be silly. I mean, this was a real concern of hers. What's he going to do? And it finally dawned on me. You see, Rachel doesn't always see herself the way that she is today. She sees herself the way she knew herself for a long time, which was somebody that struggled with weight and was very, very heavy. And so she doesn't see herself the way she is today. She sees herself the way that she was. And so in her mind, there's no way this guy could pick her up because she's big. The problem is she's not. And so what she saw from the past affects and influences her present. I mean, a lot of you have seen it. If you've been out of high school for any period of time at all, and you get back around people that you knew in high school, it is so crazy how you go back into old patterns. I was visiting with a lady one night, and we were talking, and she's like, yeah, I watched so-and-so and so-and-so's kids. And so-and-so and so-and-so used to be part of the, you know, popular crowd and that kind of thing. And this particular girl didn't necessarily used to be part of that. She's like, it is so weird. Like, we talk every week. We know everything about each other's kids. We know all this stuff. It's just weird. Well, why is it weird? Because in her mind, she still saw the past. She saw this group of people was a part of that group, and this group of people was a part of that group, and, you know, back in high school, those two groups don't mix, you know, you don't sit at the same table at lunch, you know, stand in weird little clumps during the dance and all that kind of thing, away from each other. See, she saw the past rather than the present. For many of us, we struggle with that. We struggle with it in our personal relationships. We struggle with it at work and at school. And I really think we struggle with it spiritually. There was a follower of Jesus, in fact, one of the closest followers of Jesus. There were many, many disciples, people who followed Jesus. And of that many, many, there were 12 that were specifically called out by Jesus that were part of his close group that he really poured into. But of that 12, there were 3 that were even closer than the other 9. They were his absolute closest confidants, the one that he brought with him to every major happening. Even when they went into the garden to pray before Jesus gave his life as a sacrifice for us, he took them with him even closer that they would support him and encourage him and hold him up. One of those 3 men's name was Peter. Now, Peter was an interesting guy because Peter was always willing to take the lead, always willing to charge out front, even if he hadn't really thought about the consequences. So as Jesus is sharing with those 12 that are closest to him about what's getting ready to happen, the fact that he was going to offer his life as a sacrifice for them and for us, Peter jumps up and says, no way, no how. I mean, I got a sword. I know how to use it. We find out later that when Peter tries to kill somebody, the best he can do is chop off somebody's ear. Talk about bad aim. Okay, but Peter is all convinced he can do this. He's got Jesus' back. This is great. And Jesus looks at him and says, look, before tomorrow morning, not only are you not going to be there for me, not only are you going to fail to protect me, but if this is how bad it's going to get. You are going to deny that you even know me. Not just once or twice, but 3 times. You're going to totally deny me between now and morning. Just a matter of hours. Peter's like, no, I'll never do that. I'm your guy. I'm the one who's there. I'm ready to go. Later that night, Jesus was arrested and carried off. And not just was he carried off, but he was brought in front of the high Jewish court. People began to come in and say all sorts of things about Jesus. And as Peter begins to realize what's going on, he realizes that things are not going good for Jesus. I mean, this is not looking good. I mean, at best, this guy is going to get beat. He's going to get imprisoned. He's going to be tortured. At worst, he's going to die. And Peter all of a sudden begins to think in his mind, well, if that's what's going to happen to him, what's going to happen to those people that follow him? And Peter was one of the 3 closest to Jesus. So somebody walks up to him and says, hey, aren't you one of those guys that traveled with Jesus? Peter looks at him, hey, whoa, that's not me. Denial number 1. Somebody else says, hey, you talk like one of the Galileans, those people that follow Jesus. Aren't you one of them? No, not me. My father says, man, I recognize you. I know you're one of those followers of Jesus. And Peter just flat out denies it. No, I don't know him. No way, no how. And in that moment, He comes face to face with Jesus and comes face to face with his own shame and regret and realizes that this person that he just claimed to love with all of his heart, this person that he said he would follow to the ends of the earth, the person that he said he would defend no matter what, even if it meant giving his own life, he just denied that he even knew him. And for many of us, we have those type of experiences in life. Maybe not something quite that dramatic, but we have those moments that we look back on. And when I talk about regret in your life, you can immediately point back to that situation so quickly. For some of you, it had stuff to do with relationships. For some of you, it was about school. For some of you, it was about work. For some of you, it was about the way you take care of yourself or other things. But immediately, you can think back to that huge regret moment in your life. That if somehow you just could have had magic whiteout, you could have just gotten rid of. For those of you too young to know what whiteout is, it's like this magical delete button, okay? Same thing, all right? Like you just could have gotten rid of it and it not been a part of your life. Peter sits there with all that guilt and shame and regret weighing down on him. 3 days later, after Christ has been crucified, after he's died, he's raised from the dead, and he begins to reconnect with his disciples and to teach them and share with them. And at the very end of his time, before he goes back to be with the Father, there's an interaction that happens between Jesus and Peter. We find it in John chapter 21. I'll read just a few verses to you this morning because it's the rest of the story. It's the if only moment coming to a conclusion. John chapter 21, verse 15. When they had eaten breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" "Well, yes, Lord," he said to him, "you know that I love you." "Feed my lambs," he told him. A second time he asked him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Well, yes, Lord," he said to him, "you know that I love you." "Shepherd my sheep," he told him. He asked him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now, Peter was grieved that he asked him the third time, "Do you love me?" He said, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." "Feed my sheep," Jesus said. "I assure you, when you were young, you would tie your belt and walk wherever you wanted. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will tie you and carry you where you don't want to go." He said this to signify by what kind of death he would glorify God. And after saying this, he told him, "Follow me." Now here's this interesting encounter. And to some extent, it just seems kind of weird and awkward. But help me kind of walk you through this. Jesus comes to Peter and says, "Look, do you really love me?" He's like, "Yeah." "Okay, take care of my lambs." What does that mean? "Watch over those who are powerless to help themselves. Watch over those who cannot watch over themselves. Take care of them, love them, bring them up." Hey, Peter, do you really love me? "Yes, Jesus, you know I love you." "Then feed my sheep, those that are older, those that should know but yet need help understanding and finding sustenance. Will you please take care of them?" Probably the most difficult thing. Looks at him a third time. Now, a lot of people have asked, why three times? I mean, is it one time enough? Anytime you've had a kid that doesn't get it, you know that one time is not enough. "Caleb, go clean your room." "Okay, Dad." "Caleb, go clean your room." "Oh, okay, Dad." "Caleb, if you don't clean your room." "Oh, okay, Dad." And he's up the you know, sometimes it takes three times to sink in. That's part of it. But there's also another piece to this puzzle. Why does he ask Peter three times? See, because one time Peter was asked, "Aren't you Aren't you one of those followers of Jesus? No, not me. Jesus. Peter, do you love me? Yeah, I love you. Hey, you talk like one of those Galileans. Don't you know this Jesus? Don't you follow him? No. Not me. Peter, do you love me? Jesus, you know I love you. Hey, I recognize you. You're one of those followers of Jesus. No, I never knew him. Peter, do you really love me? Yes, Jesus, you know that I love you. Then watch over my flock. Take care of my sheep. Feed the lambs. Because see, what Peter had said he was willing to do back before he denied Jesus, what Peter had said he was willing to do was to die if necessary to protect Jesus. And what Jesus was telling him was that he didn't need Peter to be willing to die to protect him. He needed Peter to be willing to die to protect those he loved. His sheep, his lambs, his flock. Who is it that he calls the sheep? He calls his church sheep. So Peter, will you do that? Peter says, you know, I will. Then he makes this statement. He says, now when you were young, you could tie up your robe, you could go wherever you wanted to go. When you're old, somebody else is going to tie you and take you where you don't want to go. What in the world does that mean? Well, some people think it talks just purely about the fact that Peter was going to die a martyr's death. Because, you know, when you're young, you can... and can do what you want to do and all that kind of thing. You can decide where you want to go, how you want to go there. You have the physical ability to get ready, all that kind of stuff. But at some point, they're going to tie you to a cross and they're going to take you to a place you don't want to go, which is a place of execution, and that's where you're going to die, which is exactly what happened to Peter. According to church history, not only was Peter crucified, but he was crucified upside down. But see, I think there's more to it than that. It's not just a foreshadowing of what's going to happen, the fact that Peter had originally said he was willing to die for Jesus, and the fact that that was really going to come true. But see, it's not just dying when it comes to a physical body, but it's being willing to die to self. See, when Peter denied Jesus, he denied Jesus because he was worried about his own skin. When he denied Jesus, he was worried about what people were going to think and what people were going to say. But Jesus says, look, if you're going to follow me, if you love me and you're willing to feed my lambs and watch my sheep and take care of my flock, if you're willing to do that, then here's the deal. It's not about you anymore. It's about following me. It's no longer about deciding where you want to walk. It's about listening to where I want you to walk and take my flock. It's no longer about what sounds good to you to do on a Saturday afternoon. It's about what do I need you to do on a Saturday afternoon. If only moments are so difficult. Here's what I've begun to learn about if only moments in our life. Very rarely does an if-only moment happen where God does not give us the opportunity to see redemption. What do I mean by that? Man, I made some stupid financial choices. And God gives you the opportunity to honor him with his finances and see that redeemed. It's not about how much, it's about how willing. Man, I made stupid, ridiculous relationship choices and stuff I just shouldn't have done. And I messed it up and I screwed it up and I wish I hadn't. And God gives you opportunity to either see relationships restored or to begin new relationships in a way that honors Him and brings Him glory, and He brings the opportunity for redemption. You blow it at work because you're lazy, you didn't show up, and they fired you. And God opens up another opportunity, maybe not as cool and glamorous a job, maybe not as big a paycheck, but He gives you the opportunity to show that self-discipline that you can step up and be who He's intended you to be. You see, in almost every if-only moment of life, in almost every time, in just the exact same way that Peter denied who Jesus was, we get the opportunity to then step up and say, but I want to follow You. Now, we've talked about some really practical things over these last several weeks. Self-discipline's a practical thing. You know, I loved getting to talk with the trainers those couple weeks and a couple weeks ago, and you know, both of them basically said this: there's nothing that's rocket science about taking care of yourself. It's about being disciplined enough to do it. Now, are there ways you can do it better than others? Absolutely. Is it good to have that training and understanding? You bet it is. But you can have all the knowledge in the world, and if you don't have follow-through, it's not going to happen. It takes self-discipline. It takes learning to be content with what I have and not always think that the grass is greener in somebody else's yard. And those are practical, real things, but the only way we truly get past an if-only moment in our life has absolutely nothing to do with us and everything to do with God. See, on our own, we are incapable. On our own, we are unable to change those things in our life that are truly necessary in order to see if-only moments turn around. But by the blood of the Lamb. I know that sounds gross and sounds weird, and if you come outside church life and church lingo, that sounds almost morbid. You know, what are you talking about? Well, it's really simple. Because Jesus was willing to offer Himself as a sacrifice for us. He tore down the wall that divided us from God and that kept us separated from an intimate, real relationship with God. And it is only through relationship with God that we are able to see things like this truly turn around. It is only because Peter was in relationship with Jesus, following Him with everything that he had, that he was able to take that if-only moment of, if only I hadn't denied Him, if only I hadn't rejected Him, if only I had spoken up. And instead, Jesus was able to turn it into take care of those that I love the most. Lead them, take them where they need to go, even be willing to offer your life on their behalf if necessary. Because I love you and I trust you and I am putting them in your care. So for Peter, it was no longer about how many fish he was going to catch as a fisherman. It wasn't about how many great messages he was going to share or how much good work he was going to do. It was about, no matter what the situation, following Jesus. Because see, to truly have relationship with Him means that we follow Him. The only way we get past the if-only moments of life is by following where He wants us to go and minimizing the reoccurrence of them and finding forgiveness for the fact that they took place. I'm going to ask you to do something this morning. I'm asking you right where you're at just to close your eyes and bow your head, not because that's a super spiritual thing. Sometimes it just helps us focus on ourselves. And Nate and Rachel and Andy are going to come up, and they're going to sing just a little bit of that song that Rachel sang before we began to talk. And if you could, I would just beg you not to listen to how pretty the song is or how beautiful the melody is, but if you would just so closely listen to these words. Because the only way that we are able to move past the if-only moments of life is if we allow God to do the work that we can't. And maybe you're here today and you're dealing with regret. We've been talking about it for weeks and you've been sitting there going, man, I need to do something about this, but I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do it. Maybe you just need to sit there in your seat and say, God, I want to move past these regrets. I want to get past these if-only moments. Maybe you just need to share that with him. Maybe you need to find somebody to talk to. Maybe you just love the opportunity to share with somebody today what's going on inside and the struggles that you're facing. And if that's the case, then there'll be some people standing in the back, and if you'd like to get up while they play and sing and find somebody back there, they'll take you over to the side room and just have the opportunity to talk and not be on the spot in front of anyone. Maybe there's a regret that you've experienced with somebody in the room. Maybe there's a struggle that you've got. Maybe there was a fight that you had on the way in today. Maybe there's a something you say, you know, I don't want that to become an if-only moment. I want to fix it. Maybe you just need to go to them, put your arms around them and hug them and love them and say, I'm sorry and I want this to be right. I don't know where God's going to lead you today, but I know this. As we move past the if-only moments of our life, it's only because of the blood. God, thank you that we can find victory in you. It's not about what we can do or can't do, but it's all about you. Thank you for sending your son. Thank you for loving us so much that you are willing to pay that price. And God, as we leave this place today, may we leave with no regrets. May we deal with you in such a way that we move past, not forgetting the lessons, but God, leaving the guilt and the pain behind and moving forward, following you in every step that we take. God, thank you for helping us take the next step in our personal journeys of faith. We pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. A couple quick things before you go today. First of all, just thanks for being with us. A lot of you know our college students are out and things like that. And so good to have you here next weekend. Things will be kind of back to normal at our normal routine, except for the fact that we're not going to be meeting on Sunday morning next week. I know that's kind of crazy. We have something special planned. We have kids coming from all over the state. They're going to be helping us next Saturday do some community service projects all around town. It's going to be a ton of fun. They're going to be here from 10 until about 3:30 next week. And since we're set up and doing that, we've decided that next Saturday night, so this coming Saturday, we're going to be having a really great worship concert at 6 o'clock. And we're also going to be combining that together with Kyle Ponton's ordination celebration. Kyle was up here doing the welcome earlier. He's been serving as our Connections pastor. We're going to be celebrating together with everyone the fact that God's called him to a ministry position, and he and his family are going to be faithfully serving and following his calling there. And so we're going to celebrate that. It's going to be tons of music. There's going to be a little drama. There's going to be some fun video. There's going to be some stuff that Kyle has absolutely no idea about. More fun ways to embarrass him than I can possibly name. So it's just going to be a great night. You are not going to want to miss out on it. Bring your friends. Saturday night's a great time. You got friends that go someplace else. You know, we'd never ask you to invite somebody from another church to come here on a Sunday. If they're plugged in their church, we love that. We want to be here to help reach people that haven't yet found a place to plug in a faith community. But sometimes a Saturday night just to get out, have fun, be able to worship together is a great time to gather together with friends and family. Hopefully you choose to bring folks in and be a part of that. We will not go any longer than 90 minutes. We'll be a little bit longer than our normal thing, but it's because we're doing so much music and fun stuff. It's just going to be a really, really great night. I hope you'll choose to be here for that. When it's done, there's going to be a celebration over at Aurelio's. There's going to be cake and all that kind of stuff provided for you. If you want to eat supper and do that kind of thing while you're over there, that'll be on your own. That'll be Dutch treat when you get there. But just a way for us to be able to hang out and connect with Kyle and his family and celebrate what God's doing in their life. So you can't beat it. Saturday night, where you get to come, hear great music, make great connections with folks, eat really good food afterwards. And then a Sunday morning, where you get to use it to serve your family or serve your neighbors or spend time connecting with people you haven't connected with before. And then the week after that, we'll be back on our normal routine and schedule on Sunday mornings. But I'm looking forward to what God's going to do next week. And don't forget, we're going to send you email updates. We'll send you at least one text update this week so that you don't forget about it. Bring somebody with you and enjoy this coming Saturday night at 6. Have a great week. We'll see you then.